Pardon me. I was just doing some more meditations on the dividend discount models. My apologies. excuse me. Well, let's get restarted on slide number 35 and take a look at my favorite dividend discount model. And this is called the discounted cash flow model. It also goes by the name of dividends and earnings model, but it doesn't really use any earnings, so don't understand that. But it's also just called the dividend discount model. This uses the present value of expected dividends and the present value of the expected future price of the stock to value the share of a stock. So in the previous presentation, we ended by saying, well, how do we use it with a company that isn't paying any dividends? Well, it turns out that we can actually use this one with companies that aren't paying dividends. Very cool. We'll take a look at that later. And the sad part about this is that it isn't really covered in detail in your book. So that's kind of sad. But it's really just the pure form of the dividend discount model that we took a look at the very beginning of our discussion of dividend discount models, with the present value of the expected price of the stock as our final cash inflow. What? I know. It's harder to explain than it is to do. So let's do it. But the formula is, you take the present value of the future dividends. Well, we did that. We did that at the beginning of the previous presentation. And we add to that the present value of the price of the stock, the expected price of the stock, because we know it's going to be in the future, we don't know. But we add to that the present value of the expected price of the stock when we plan to sell. And with the other DDMs, this model is very sensitive to our estimates and our choice of required rate of return, and hence can be very far off the mark. So let's take a look at slide number 36. Now, you might want to get a sheet of paper out, and I'm going to show you a different way to do this in a second, because you need to write some things down. And, of course, in the face-to-face class, we would be writing it on the board, and the students would be writing it together. So let's assume it's January 1st, 2014. Pretzels Unlimited is currently selling for $22 a share, and they plan to pay $2 per share in dividends in 2014. Remember, they could at any time, any quarter, stop their dividends. They expect to increase their dividends, or we've watched that they've been increasing their dividends such and such over the last several years. So we or they expect to increase their dividends to $2.20 in 2015, $2.30 in 2016, $2.30 in 2017. So those are our expectations of dividends over the next 4 years. We will be selling the stock at the end of 2017, and we expect the price to be $27 per share at that time. Our required rate of return is 12%. So we go back to the very purest form of the dividend discount model. We take the present value of the future dividends and add all those up, and we add to that the present value of a share of the stock when we plan to sell. In other words, what's the price going to be in 4 years? So you go across to 12%. Go get the present value tables, either print them out or go look at it on the screen. You go across to 12% and down 1 year, you'll see that that present value multiplier is 0.893. So we multiply the dividend for the first year, $2, times 0.893, and that amount is right here, 1.786. Make sure you got that right on your calculator. And then the dividend for year number two is $2.20 times 0.797. Go across the 12%, down 2 years, you should see 0.797. And that's $1.75, a little more than that. And then the dividend for year number three is $2.30 times the multiplier for year number three. Go across the 12%, down 3 years, 0.712, $1.64 almost, $2.30 times 0.636. That's the present value multiplier for year number four, because that's the dividend in the fourth year, 2017. And that's $1.46. And those are the dividend, the future value, cash flows discounted, you know, multiplying times the present value multiplier. And then we expect the price to be $27 at the end of 2017 when we plan to sell. We use this, here's where people get tripped up. Don't use year number five. Don't go down one more year. This is the same year that we got the last dividend. So you use 0.636 again, because that cash flow happens in the exact same year, okay? Make sure you don't get that. People do that a lot. They just keep going down the table. No. This price of the stock that we plan to sell in the last year is the same year as the dividend. So you add up all those numbers, and you wind up with $23.81. So we believe that the present value of Pretzels Unlimited, what it's worth to us today, assuming we get the cash flows that we expect and we have a required rate of return of 12%, we believe that it's worth $23.81. So it's actually a pretty good stock for us to buy. Do you understand? The market is pricing it at $22, and we think it's worth $23.81. Now, do you see the problems inherent? What happens if we don't get those dividends? And what happens if the price isn't $27 at the end of 2007? Oh, well. And for that reason, we need to really just eliminate any kind of pretense of precision. You see, all our numbers are very, very precise. But hey, you know, we're just putting our finger up and seeing which way the wind blows. But it's a help for us. It's a way for us to tilt the odds in our favor, because companies that have been producing a good dividend growth rates for many years often continue to do that until 2008 comes along, and the stock price, yeah, right. So slide number 37. Now, one of the things we do in the face-to-face class is we draw it on the board in this fashion. Look at the table format on slide 37. Like a spreadsheet, those of you who know what spreadsheets are, right? I think it's much easier to comprehend and calculate in this format. Yes. Put the years over here, and then the cash flows, the $2 of dividends in 2014, $2.20 in year number 15, $2.30 in 16, $2.36 in 2017, and then the $27 for the price of the share of stock, and use the present value multipliers for years 1, 2, 3, and 4. You see, remember, we're going to get the dividends for 2017 and the price for 2017 in the same year, so we use the same present value multiplier. But if we rearrange the table on line 38, it's a little easier. You see, because why should we bother having two 2017s? It makes sense to only have one 2017 and add the dividend and the stock price in the last year. Not only does it save us a couple of manual calculations, but more importantly, folks, it allows us to use a special spreadsheet function to calculate a very important number. Slide number 39, the internal rate of return. IRR is the function in most spreadsheets. The internal rate of return is a measure of what rate of return we expect to get from a series of cash flows, including both positive cash flows and negative cash flows, because you have to put money out in an investment. Someday, dear students, when you take an upper level or a graduate finance or investment class, you will learn how to manually compute the internal rate of return. And hopefully you will not have a sadistic professor who will require you to do it more than once, because it's not fun. That's why they have computers. We are simply going to enter the numbers into a spreadsheet formula and press the Enter key. Can you handle that? Yeah, okay. In fact, on the website, on the class webpage, is a sample spreadsheet for Pretzels Unlimited that uses this rate of return, this internal rate of return formula, and also shows you a really slick way of not having to use your calculator to do the calculations that we just did on the previous slides. And the internal rate of return will calculate to precision what we believe we're going to get from our Pretzels Unlimited. We required a 12% rate of return, but we saw that it's going to give us a better one. It's going to do better than 12% because if it did 12%, it would be the exact same price that we're paying for it. So it's actually better than that. So what do our numbers tell us will be our expected rate of return? Slide number 40. By typing in the negative and positive cash flows, because remember, we had to pay $22 to get this thing. They don't give it to us, unless somebody gave it to us, but we had to pay $22 for the shares. That's our initial outlay. That's the negative cash flow, the outflow, the negative number. And then we put in the dividends for year number 1, 2014, year number 2, 2015, year number 3, 2016, and then we added the dividend for year 2017 plus the $27 that we think the stock is going to be worth. And we typed in the formula, and if you know anything about spreadsheets, it's really very simple. This would be B, there's the A column, there's the B column. And this would be B2 to B5, and that's what you see over here. You see that? Internal rate, this is excuse, I'm sorry, Excel, equal sign IRR, internal rate of return, open parentheses, B2 to B12, so cell B2 to cell, I'm sorry, did they say B12? It's a vitamin. It's cell from B2 to cell B5, and then what they want you to do, you can actually enter zero in this place, but they want you to put your best guess of what you think it's going to return. So that's why it says approximate rate of return is our guess as to what the internal rate of return would be. You can just leave it zero and let the computer do it because it has to go through this iterative process to try to guess what the return is, and then it gets closer and closer as the guesses get better and better. And someday you're going to have to learn how to do that. And you math people and you computer people will be really excited and the rest of you will hate it. So in the face-to-face class, we would now take a look at the example spreadsheet. So you're going to do that, right? You're going to go look at the example spreadsheet and see how all you got to do is type in these numbers of what you expect the cash flows to be. And then you'll come up with the present value. It'll do it for you. Plus, it'll calculate what it thinks the internal rate of return will be. And internal rate of return is a little tricky. It can sometimes backfire. It can sometimes come up with really strange results. But in this case, no. It's a very straightforward investment. Okay? Cool. So now you don't even have to use your calculators to do these problems, to do the discounted cash flow problems. You can use the spreadsheet, which makes life a whole lot easier. Slide number 41. The discounted cash flow model continued. Here's example number 2. Jeans Are Us. Yeah, you heard what the one chromosome said to the other chromosome? Do these jeans make me look fat? This is what the face-to-face students have to face every day, folks. Jeans Are Us is currently selling for $21 a share, but it pays no dividends. In fact, it's not making any money. It's still trying to come up with that next big blockbuster drug using gene therapy, and we believe that GRUS, Gruss, will sell for around $50 per share in 5 years. Okay? It's one of those companies that's going to explode or implode, and our required rate of return is 13%. How can we determine if this is a good investment? Well, with no dividends, can we use the dividend discount models from the previous presentation? No, we can't. We can't. But we can still use the discounted cash flow models. Because the discounted cash flow model, the one we're just working on, says that the value of the stock is equal to the present value of the future dividends. Well, that's easy. It's not paying any dividends, so that's zero. But we can also use the present value of the price of the stock when we plan to sell, the expected price of the stock, because we really don't know what the price of the stock is going to be. We just expect it to be this. So, if we expect the price of the stock to be $50 in 5 years, and we require a 13% rate of return, we go across the 13% down to 5 years. Now make sure you do it on the present value tables. Or if you're so inclined, you want to use the darn exponentiation, go right ahead. But I like the tables better. 0.543. So you multiply $50 times 0.543. Remember, we get no value from dividends because the dividends are zero. And that's our present value, $27.13. So if we expect a 13% rate of return, the price is $21 now, we expect the price to be $50 in 5 years, we believe that it's worth $27, and the market is pricing it at $21. Now, dear students, is this a Johnson & Johnson? Is this a Coca-Cola? No. This is a very risky stock. And this is the type of stock that you would want just a little bit in your portfolio. Because this is the kind of stock that can make you very, very rich someday, very wealthy. Turn $1,000 into $50,000. As Peter Lynch likes to say, it could be a 10-bagger, a 50-bagger, a 100-bagger. Or it could be, instead of $50, 50 cents. Exactly. It's the kind of stock that if they, you know, if the FDA denies their drug, or if they run out of money, or somebody else beats them to the punch and gets the drug out to market sooner, the company just falls into the porcelain oasis. And that's important for you to be able to identify. Because should you categorically deny all companies like this? I say yes. No. Obviously, no. I mean, obviously, you might come across a company like this that really piques your interest, and you want to put a little bit of money into it, and you realize that you could all go into the porcelain oasis. This is the kind of company that several years ago I was a sucker for, because San Diego's filled with these kind of companies doing incredibly exciting technology, biotechnology, and you know one of them or two of them are going to become the next Amgen or the next Genentech, huge companies, maybe Biogen, IDEC. IDEC is one of the locally grown companies. They merged with Biogen back east. And the others, all the others are just going to disappear and never be seen from again. Uh-huh. So, you know, be aware. Unlike the other dividend discount models, this discounted cash flow model can be used if there are no dividends. Very cool. So now what are you going to do? Go to worksheet number one, right, and do the last few problems where we do the discounted cash flow models with dividends, and then the very last one is without dividends. So they're in the same order as we covered them in the presentation for both worksheet number one, number two, and the assignment sheet, and the exam. Slide number 42. Chapter 6 in the 4th, 5th, and 6th edition also cover another cousin, another sibling in the dividend discount model family, and that's the residual income model. And as with the discounted cash flow model, it allows us to value a company that is not paying dividends. Instead of using dividends, the model uses earnings, so it's very similar to the constant perpetual growth model. We'll skip it for now. You know, we could come back to it later, but it's the same idea. I think you have enough on your plate as it is, so make sure you concentrate on the ones that we do the worksheet, the ones we do in the presentation and the worksheet. Concentrate on those puppies. Because, folks, there are many, many more. We're just looking at some of the more popular ones, the more well-known ones. Slide number 43. Okay, Piano. All right, this is all great. But just where are we supposed to get all this historical information anyway? And just who decides what next year's earnings per share, sales per share, cash flow per share, dividends per share, etc., etc., etc. are going to be? Let alone the expected price of a stock in 3 to 5 years. Where do you get this information? Well, before the internet, BI, this information was not readily available. Normally, most investors would ask their broker for it. Or you would use one of the securities industry's trusted information sources. And traditionally, the most respected source was, and still is in my humble opinion, slide number 44, the value line. Still one of the most respected and trusted sources of data and analysis. And traditionally, it was often the only source that many investors used for data and analysis. Of course, along with the company's materials. It is not cheap, folks. It's still, my understanding, $600 a year for the print version. And if you want to go online, it's not that much cheaper, $538. Check out their website. But that's why we have libraries. One of my favorite things to do, my wife loves reading, so we go to the library together. She goes and finds some more books to read, and I dig into the value line and just get lost. And I'm not trying. I tell you that. Go get lost. Go. It's such a joy. It's so exciting. And you're going to see the bonus assignment, chapter number 6, where I want you to spend an afternoon in the library just playing with all this data. I'm a big fan of Value Line, especially the timeliness, the safety indicators, not so much the technical. One study which ignored transaction costs and tax consequences only used their timeliness indicator. It showed how you would have beaten the market handsomely over a 20-year period by just buying and selling stocks as they received and then subsequently lost their number one timeliness designation. So all you did is look at one piece of information. Did Value Line consider it timely for this stock, number one? You bought it. And if it lost number one, went down to number two and number three, you sold it. I mean, it was that simple. And you did really well. Now, of course, is that going to happen into the future? We don't know. Probably won't. But I'm not saying you should do this. I'm just saying that, you know, shows you that they've got a pretty darn good track record. Now, in your book on slide 45, not yet. In your book, in the sixth edition, they show the Value Line example for McGraw-Hill. Now, this is a very interesting choice of stock. McGraw-Hill is the company that owns S&P, which is a major competitor to the Value Line, and it's also the company that made the textbook. Right. So you can imagine when the editors were told by the authors, we want to use the Value Line in the Introduction to Investments textbook, and McGraw-Hill said, but wait a minute, wouldn't you like to use S&P's research? And the authors said, no, because I've seen S&P's research. It's not that good. I haven't seen it lately, so I don't know if they changed it or not. But it's not as good as the Value Line, in my humble opinion. And so what you're going to do is open up to page 206, and I forget where it's very similar in the 5th and 4th editions, or better yet, go to the library, and you'll see all 4,000 of them, or however many there are, 3,000 of them, because they now do small company stocks, but I very rarely look at those. I mostly look at the large company stocks, and there's some 2,000 of those. Can you find the indicators, the price, future price projections, the historical data, the cash assets, the receivables, the inventory, the description and the analysis of the business, the historical annual rates, the insider institutional buying and selling, the amount of debt and the number of shares outstanding, the financial strength, the stability, price growth, earnings predictability. Folks, this is a sip from the fire hose. Look at this thing. And that's only the top page. On the next slide, the next page. And so, when we say, this was late 2009, and remember, look at the 2008. Ooh, boy, everybody went down there big time. And they were predicting, in 2009, late 2009, that in 2012, 2013, the price was at $28.73. They're predicting between $48 and $64. Yeah, look at that, folks. So when we say in 3 to 4 years, we think the price is going to be that much, all we're doing is stealing from the bounty line, and that's not a bad place to steal from. And here are the dividends. Where are the dividends? Right here. Dividends per share declared. Here are the dividend growth. We can compare. We can compute the dividend growth. And where's the cash flow? We can compute the cash flow per share. And we can compute the sales per share. And look at the average price to sales, price to cash flow, price to earnings. And then they tell us that in 3 to 4 years, we think the dividends are going to be up to $1.10. And the earnings per share are going to be up to $3.50. It doesn't mean they're right? No. It doesn't always mean they're right. It shows you the sales, the operating margin, depreciation, and net profit. Look at all this information. The capital structure, how much debt, how much equity, how many insiders are buying and selling. Look at the price projections in the 2012 to 2014 range. Timeliness, no, they're saying it wasn't very timely at the time. Don't buy it. They think it was going to go down even more. And so the next page, looky here. There's the growth rates for the past so many years and estimated for the next years of the sales, the cash flow, the earnings, the dividends. So when we said we thought that Intel was going to grow their sales or grow their earnings, where did we get that from? Well, maybe we got it from ValueLine. Maybe not. Maybe we got it from someplace else. But these people are pretty darn good, folks. They've been around a good long time. And here's their description of the company itself. They talk about the company, and at the very end, they tell you whether or not they think it's a pretty good company. They say, look, the near-term picture is concerning, even given recent earnings shortfall. But 3 to 5 year recovery potential is wide. And that's why when you go back to the mutual funds, when we talk about a turnover of 20 to 25%, 30%. You see, good investors are continually reevaluating what they believe the future is for these companies over the next 2, 3, 5 years. And can you see how using the discounted cash flow models, you can and use the value line or use your own or use somebody else's estimates of what the stock is going to be like? Yeah, exactly. So people who have a 4, 5, 3, 4, 5 year time horizon look ahead for, but remember, these are big companies, folks. McGraw-Hill is a huge company, owns magazines and television stations and radio stations, and they own S&P and all their tech. They make a lot of money off of textbooks. I wonder why they charge students enough for them. So that's why we like mutual funds with a 20 to 30% rate of turnover, because these are the companies that are doing this kind of look ahead 3 to 4 to 5 years, as opposed to looking ahead 3 to 4 to 5 months and have a turnover rate of 200%. Yeah, that's not my idea of investing. Maybe it's your idea. I consider that speculation. Okay, enough said. And not off my soapbox. 48. Let's put ValueLine to the test, huh? In 2009, the price of McGraw-Hill was $28.73. Their price prediction for early 2013 was in the range around $48 to $68. And on February 15th, 2013, the price closed at $45. So that's not bad, folks. It's actually pretty darn good. When they made this prediction at the end of 2009, the stock market had rallied from the depths of the 2008-2009 crisis, but many people were still predicting the end of the world. Oh, by the way, some of them are still predicting the end of the world. And I remember in 2009-2008, well, at the end of 2008, ValueLine also has their macro look about stocks, the big picture. And they kept saying, well, you know, things are really kind of touching and go, but they're not looking good, but we don't think it's going to be too bad. And they kept saying, you know, we don't think it's going to be too bad. And it doesn't look good, though, but we don't think it's going to be too. And then all of a sudden they said, yeah, it's going to be, it's bad. It's really too late. Everybody was blindsided, even Value Line. But in 2009 and in 2010, they were predicting, you know, huge price gains in the next 3 to 5 years. And, you know, 15%. They were predicting that. And sure enough, if you go look now in 2014 at the 5-year returns for many of the mutual funds, it's 15, 17, 20%. The S&P 500, exactly what the S&P 500 should go back and look. But how many people had the guts, had the courage to make that kind of prediction in 2009 and 2010 when it still, you know, we still didn't know we were going to get out of it? So far, so good. There's still a lot of people who say we're not going to get out of it. We've only postponed the inevitable and we're all going to fall down. And, you know, someday they're going to be right. Maybe next year, maybe 50 years from now. Well, probably not. Probably sooner than 50 years because crashes tend to happen every 20, 30 years. Slide 49. Let's take a look at the fourth. Was that the fourth edition? I'm sorry, the fifth edition. This is the fourth edition. And 2005, right? Let me go back and make sure. Yeah, here's the fourth edition. The fourth edition in mid-2005, they were predicting, the stock was at 47. They were predicting like 66 to about 80 or so. What happened in 2005? Well, what happened? Yeah, right. 2005, everything looked pretty good. Their price prediction for late 2009 was in the range from 66 to 82, and it was hovering around 24 bucks. What happened, Value Line? Well, it reached 70 in mid-2007. Right? So they were actually early. I mean, it happened faster than they thought. But it started falling as the credit market started reacting to the home mortgage loan crisis. Mid-2007 is when things started to, maybe we didn't do such a good idea, wasn't such a good idea to let home prices skyrocket. And others were saying, nah, it's just a pause. Go buy now because next year prices are going to be 20%, 30% higher. Home, you can't lose money. It's a new era. It's different this time. Well, McGraw-Hill owns Standard & Poor's, and you've heard of them, right? They were the ones who were giving a AAA rating. And what does that mean? Wait till we get the bonds. They were giving the highest rating to these home mortgages that were based on people lying about how much money they made. And sure enough, as the home mortgage crisis spread to the entire financial sector, McGraw-Hill was destroyed like so many other financial companies, like everybody. And their mid-2007 prediction from the fifth edition was even uglier. Well, Christ, of course, mid-2007, we still were clinging to the idea that maybe it's not going to be so bad. I kept arguing with my buddy saying, you know, I think housing prices are going to fall 20, 25% like as they did in 91, 92, 1991, 1992. And he said, no, they're going to go down 50, 60%. And I said, come on, Jim, you know, that's a huge drop for real estate. He was absolutely right. But what about their early 2003 prediction from the third edition, huh? What about that? Let's take a look at that. Because that was actually bang on the dot. In the third edition, at the end of 2002 or beginning of 2003, they believed that the price would be between 90 and 110. Okay? Well, let's see what happened. In early 2003, Value Line predicted that the price of McGraw-Hill would have been around 90 to 110 in 2005 and 6. Well, what happened? Well, that McGraw-Hill split their stock 2-for-1 in the intervening time. So you have to divide these prices by 2 to compare them to the previous two predictions, to the sixth and the fourth edition and the fifth, because everything they split the stock 2-for-1, so the price dropped in half. Hooray for the Value Line! They were bang on the money. They reached the $120 level by the end of 2006. Of course, $60 split adjusted. So I get a kick when some investors trash the value line, right? They make mistakes too, just like everybody else. They're not perfect. But I would sure love to see how those investors' long-term results stack up against the long-term results of the value line. Yeah, I think I know who would come out ahead. That doesn't mean they're perfect, folks. It doesn't mean you should take everything they say as gospel. What are they saying now? They're saying that, you know, the easy money, which wasn't that easy, folks. Staying in the market 2008, 9, 10, 11, that was not easy. Very volatile. But you had to believe that we were going to come out of this, or we weren't. And if we weren't, doesn't matter where you put your money. We'll all be digging for beetle grubs and boiling bark for dinner. But they believe that the next 3 to 5 years are probably going to be okay, but they're certainly not going to be like the last 3 to 5 years. Anybody expecting 15, 20, 17% over the next 5 years, as we've had the last 5 years, you know, is just, I think, being overly optimistic. In my humble opinion, we'll see what happens. Okay. So that is our chapter on common stock valuation. Now, here's the most important part, folks. You're going to go back. You're going to learn how to do these. They're not that hard once you've done them a few times and you really understand what we're doing. We're simply just taking into account the fact that money given to us in the future has a different value today than it has in the future. But is it something we should religiously hold on to and make all our decisions? No, not at all. In fact, the opposite. We do these as just a way to tilt the odds in our favor. We do all the calculations, and we see what a company could do for us, and then we throw them all away, run them through the shredder, dunk them in the ocean, just realize that they are just smoke and mirrors. They are just weather projections for the next 3 months or 3 years or whatever. We do our calculations to tilt the odds in our favor, and then we ignore them. Don't even look at them and ask ourselves, do we really want to own Federal Express? Or do we want to own Ford? Or maybe Facebook? And who knows anything about Forest Solar? Because that's what we're doing. We're buying a business. And the numbers are important, but the business, in my humble opinion, is more important. And what are the future prospects for that business? And the numbers will take care of themselves. When you read One Up on Wall Street, which you should do, it's one of the first books you should read when it comes to learning about stock investing, because it's an excellent book, and listen to the bibliography, my commentary in the bibliography in Chapter 5. It's also in Chapter 1. You will see that what Peter Lynch did is he did all his calculations, he did all his research, and put them into three ring binders. And then before he was about ready to make the decision whether to buy or sell the stock, he would hold the three-ring binder in his hand and give himself what he called the 90-second story. He would explain, I am buying Federal Express because it is one of the three premier delivery services in the world. It has tremendous technology and management, and the Internet is only growing in terms of how much is being sold on the Internet, so that stuff all has to be delivered. You give yourself the pep talk, the 30-second, the 90-second, the 60-second story about why you want to buy it or why you want to sell it. And that would invariably convince him about if it was a good company to buy or a good company to sell. Make sense? And don't forget their competitors. If you do this for FedEx, you got to do it for UPS. And maybe for DHL. And maybe you'll buy both. Exactly. Peter Lynch said he got some of his best ideas for investments when a company would come and describe their product, and he would ask them, well, what about your competitors? And the guy would say, well, you know, they're doing this, and then, you know, hem and haw and saying, you know, we're not doing anything like that. And that's how he got some of his best ideas. So, dear students, You've learned how to do these calculations. Go back, do them again. Worksheet number one, worksheet number two, the assignment sheet. Maybe you'll spend an afternoon in the library playing with the value line, bonus assignment number six. I wish you the greatest success. We want you to be awesome investors. And by following these precepts, you're going to tilt the odds in your favor, and for the most part, you should be well rewarded. Now, are you going to beat the S&P 500? Maybe. Who knows? Who cares? You're going to buy well-run companies with good valuations that are producing good streams of income for you in the future. And if you beat the S&P 500, congratulations. And if you don't, congratulations. But you sure aren't going to crash and burn as many investors who simply trying to chase the next big thing. Make sense? Okay. We wish you the best of luck. Now, in our next chapter, Projecting Cash Flow and Earnings, we will discuss in more detail ratio analysis. Be awesome, dear students. We wish you the best of luck, and we want to hear all about your successes, and we want to hear about your failures, too. But we know that you're going to have more successes than failures.